the best coaches in the game. We really ain't playing. We regroup up in the Slack chat where the coaches debrief. We be piecing these puzzles, occupy the chunk of the pie. Ain't no lie when we hit the block, helmets casket is top. You be seeing helmet after helmet, helmet after helmet. First place, second place, fifth place, eighth place, 12th place, 15, 16, 20. So many helmets, you got blurred vision. We got.
Oh shit. We are back. Bold calls. DFS Army Fantasy Football Podcast, breaking down the running back position. I've got my man season-long Cez here with me. My name is The Geek, a.k.a. Kevin Allen. What's up, Cez?
How are you, my friend? This is the crown jewel of our podcasting series, but we're actually, with the running backs, we're gonna do multiple shows because the running back market changes so much. We are currently June 8th. So we'll try to do at least two more running back podcasts alone, but we'll be talking running backs throughout the off season. But as you put out your initial running back rankings, I'm looking forward to going over them today.
We are celebrating. Yes. The running back rankings, my running back rankings haven't been added to the DFSArmy.com draft kit where you go to crush your season-long best ball and dynasty drafts. Cez and I have been in all kinds of drafts, dynasties, best balls, best ball dynasties. Everything you could think of, flex, super flex, triple flex, TE flex, TE premium, whatever you want, we're in it. So we got a good feel for this. Mm-hmm. But the running back position, it's so key. I'm going to ask you something before we get into the breakdown of the actual ranking, Cez. How do you feel about zero RB in general and zero RB this year?
Yeah, for those of you who don't know what the zero running back theory is, the very short version, not to bore those who don't know, it's basically, as you know, you've been in all these drafts, you the listener, and everyone goes after running back like a vengeance. Some of them, the people's two and three picks in a row is running back. So what the geek just referred to is the zero running back is to completely fade that, take the wide receivers and the other pass catchers early, and then basically fill in the blanks with running backs in the later rounds and off the waiver wire. And then your question is, how do I feel about that? The way that I attack running backs in drafts is fully dependent on where I am drafting and what the board gives me. So obviously if I am, and so I'm for it if it presents itself. That one year, about 4 years ago, when everybody was doing zero running back, it no longer works because those PPR value running backs don't fall because everyone's going after them. But in a year like this, where there's running back inflation, to say the least, and where everyone is going running back bananas, in fact, they're drafting running backs that are lesser players than some of the elite wide receivers, meaning people are taking Aaron Jones and Miles Sanders above Tyreek Hill and Devontae Adams. So when that happens, it's time to consider the zero running back strategy and load up on the elite pass catchers.
I'm calling that the hybrid version where you don't go in saying, hey, I'm not going to take a running back until the fourth round. You don't go in saying that, but if that's what presents itself in the draft, then this is a very important, what I call value-based drafting, where you just don't go in with a specific plan, but rather you allow yourself to be flexible.
Yes.
Flexible. I need to flex.
And understand the draft board. Understand if you're drafting a pick 11, 12, it's likely, I mean, your best bet is likely receiver, or at very best, receiver, running back. To go in and say, I'm definitely getting two running backs no matter what, it could be if the value falls, but it's a dangerous game you're playing.
Now, I will add a caveat to this, and my caveat is, in best ball leagues, there is an absolute and legitimate and correct premium for the running back position. And the reason is, in a best ball league, because of the best ball nature, you can get all of these volatile wide receivers that don't produce consistently, but produce occasionally on your team late. Whereas running backs, once you've passed basically what are the starters, you're really grasping at straws. You're taking Alexander Mattison types and Tony Pollock's and guys
Pollock.
Who
Tony Pollock.
Pollock. Who's Tony Pollock?
Jackson is an actor. But yeah, but the key thing, but and you're setting
the later picks in the best ball is very important. I need all of my picks working for my team. And if I'm in a best ball league, I can't draft a bunch of running backs when there are viable wide receivers and tight ends and people who play, and I'm taking handcuff types who won't play unless there's an injury. That is a disastrous approach for best ball, which is why we take them earlier. Never do zero running back in a best ball league, people. That will not
Yeah, work. I mean, it's and the key thing that you said it perfectly. The one key thing that you missed is that the difference between a redraft league that you play with your friends or competitively online with some strangers and a best ball league is that in redraft, there's a waiver wire. If you're running backs, you can constantly cycle through running backs on the waiver wire, make bids, find those guys, and to replace that running back position. In a best ball, you got what they got. You know, you have what you have.
That's part of the hope. In the redraft zero RB strategy, the thought is somebody will get hurt and I'll just blow my entire fob load on a backup guy who's going to, you know, I'll be able to find one in season. Now, let's get into the rankings real quick. And what I want to do is, I mean, we'll talk about the top, but we're also going to talk about some values, some ADP risers that maybe I don't like, maybe you do, and vice versa. Some guys I won't have on any teams. So I want to start right at the top of the draft. Christian McCaffrey, first pick off the board, not just at running back, at all positions. Unless you're in a super flex where you want to consider going for Lamar Jackson or Pat Mahomes with your first pick, which is acceptable to me if you do, but I wouldn't. I still am taking Christian McCaffrey, the number one fantasy football asset 2020. What say you, Cez?
I mean, I don't want to bore the listeners with talking about Christian McCaffrey. I mean, Christian McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley, they're the top two picks. Yeah. No knees into discuss. Anyone who's listening to our podcast in June knows that.
You know it. I was just going to say more of a Christian. Is there any player in any league format that is worth more than Christian McCaffrey outside of maybe Dynasty where you might say I value, you know, a quarterback more?
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that I think is a little bit, I don't want to say hot takey, but I think people have to realize that no matter what happens, there's a very good chance, like almost certain chance, that Christian McCaffrey is not going to produce like last year. Now, I'm not saying it can happen.
You don't need it, though.
But I think what happens is people expect it. And if you get it, and you know, like where every week it was like 27, 28, okay, bad matchup. They only score 3 points to Carolina Panthers. McCaffrey still has 19 or 23, you know, and then most, I think like this year you're going to see McCaffrey have 14-point fantasy games multiple weeks in a row before he hits you that 40-point game. Like, you're going to have lulls, but the floor is still going to be high. So I just, and the reason is, I don't think they're going to run McCaffrey into the ground. And also, I think that they're, not that they have another running back, but I think the Teddy Bridgewater short passing game is going to be spread around. So it's, based on Matt Rhule and what he did at the college level, it looks like he likes the quarterback to spread around those short passes. So instead of McCaffrey getting 8 for 80 in the air, he might get 3 for 40 or
I think it's McCaffrey who's getting the short passes. That's the whole thing.
He'll get some of them, Based on some of the research that I've done and some of the tape that I watch, I'm not projecting that McCaffrey for 110 catches or whatever he got last, 120 catches. I'm projecting him more for like 90 catches. So just be prepared. Sure. There's going to be those weeks where he goes 2 for 30 or 3 for 30 in the passing game. And those are going to be the weeks where you don't get the, you know, where you have like 16 fantasy points. It never happened last year. So that's all I want to say about McCaffrey.
Absolutely fair. No one can produce 25 points a week every week for their whole career. Mm-hmm. There will be some regression. Now, that being said, the top of the draft. Next guy is Saquon Barkley. I think similar reasoning. Saquon, very, very much a matchup-proof player. Very useful in the passing game for his team. Never comes off the field. He's exactly the kind of guy you want in your RB1 spot. He's the number two player overall in fantasy.
Plus, he's fun to own, man. I mean, it's like, you know, just at any moment you could have that 40-yard burst. I mean, he hasn't actually been that great between the tackles. He's been good, but not like that great. It's just the pass. It's probably no fault of his own either. It's, you know, hopefully the Giants improve that line this year and the line play. But yeah, I mean, you know, you're taking Barkley at 2. There's no question there. I mean, there's a case for Zeke, who I know you have at 3 on your radar, on your rankings.
No, yes. No case, though. No case. I think Zeke is a full tier down. He's not getting the volume of McCaffrey, of Barkley at all. He's not on the same tier in terms of the passing game usage. Now, And I think the Cowboys are just a better team that will win more games. So between him and anybody else, like I just think Zeke is a clear number three. He was not spectacular last season. He was good. He had volume. He was not the Zeke from the year before that. That was explosive. He lost.
Well, it was the pass catching. Yeah. He went from like catching like 75 passes back into like the high 50s again. You know, I mean, that was the difference. And now there's more pass catching options. Here's the thing with Zeke. Here, and this is a major thing. The guy not only doesn't get hurt, he doesn't even show up on the injury report. There's never a point on Wednesday where you're like, oh, I got to figure out what, just in case. Oh my God, I got to go get Tony Pollard. Like, if you don't get his handcuff, if you don't get Tony Pollard in drafts, you're like, you're not like that worried. Saquon Barkley, I mean, missed a massive amount of games. And then when he came back last year, I mean, he's striking me as a guy that's not as ironclad as Zeke. That's when you take Zeke. When you take Zeke, you know, he's going in my lineup, and the only week he's on my bench is that one bye week. I'm never going to have to worry. And there's a lot of value in that kind of safety.
I don't know if I should hold the high ankle sprain against Barkley or for him, man. My man came back after like 2 weeks from a 6 week injury.
It was like four weeks.
And then three. I mean, it wasn't a long time. It was supposed to be a 6 week injury. He was back really fast. So I don't know if that's a negative or a positive. Like, dude, this guy, you know, even when he got hurt, he was back on the field.
Not saying he's not the better player. I'm just saying when you draft Zeke, it's like I said, there's no like questionable. He never gets a questionable. It's not like he doesn't miss games. He doesn't only not miss games. He's never on the injury report.
With Mike Thomas being the consensus number one wide receiver, spoiler alert, where is the point in the draft? Now, we've gotten through McCaffrey, Barkley, and this is a big question that comes up. How do I compare wide receiver to running back? When Zeke is up, is it okay for me to take Michael Thomas instead in a PPR league?
I mean, the first time I'm considering Michael Thomas is at 4 overall after Zeke, and I'm probably not taking Michael Thomas until 5 overall because I know this is a little different from you, but I still like Dalvin Cook at that point at 5, and you know, we can get into who your number 5 running back is, but
heads are going to explode with this bold call. So stay tuned, guys. There is some boldness coming up. We're in ADP right now, but you'll get a little taste of something bold here, real quick.
By the way, your mic is popping a little bit. It sounds a little hollow today. I don't know. Can you tilt it up towards your? Just you see how mine's like going like this? There you go. I'm just curious. Now talk right into that thing. Let's see how it goes.
Is that any different? And it shouldn't be.
A little bit. Not really. Again, it just sounds hollow for some reason. But whatever. We'll continue on.
That's my head. Listen, it's hollow.
Yeah, no, the listeners love hearing you, so we'll keep it going. All right. So anyway, So I was looking at your running back rankings, which you're going to be posting on the DFS Army. And before we get to your groundbreaking, oh my God, eye popping, holy crap, what'd you do at number 5? Before we're going to come back to the player I want to talk to you about, which I noticed that you have as your running back 7, and a lot of people have him in the top 7, is Derrick Henry. And this is where I think that I have a problem with the consensus rankings. And in PPR leagues, in non-PPR, you know, Derrick Henry, you could be your RB2 or 3 if you wanted to. But in PPR leagues, which most of us play in at this point, I don't think Derrick Henry is a first-round pick. And the reason is, I mean, last year was his career high of 18 catches. 18 catches. So, and he still, and you remember so he had a massive touchdown total. He had a massive yardage total and only finished as the RB6 or 7 overall. I mean, just by comparison, if he had caught 50 passes, not only would he have been the RB1 right ahead of Christian McCaffrey, I mean, this would have been an all-time season. That's how damaging the non-PPR is. Let's just give him, you know, 20 catches just for argument's sake. And let's just say another running back who catches 60 passes, which is in the elite tier. That's a 40 pass difference. And that's about how
catching 60 passes beyond the top 7 or 8 guys.
Well, that's where you have him. You have him in the top 7 or 8
guys.
I know,
but what you're saying is like, who am I moving up? I'll compare him to who? Nick Chubb. How many receptions did Nick Chubb have last year?
Well, no, I don't. That's not that's not the guy who I think. What I'm saying is that this he should not. The receivers could go there, or Joe Mixon could go there. Like Derrick Henry. Like, okay, so you're betting on Derrick Henry repeating that year to get that draft position. So let's say Derrick Henry just has
scoring touchdowns like a fucking
fine, but goat. So what did he have last year? Like 20 touchdowns? I mean, you need him to score. I mean, you probably could project him for 11 and a half, right? So if you project him for 11 and a half, and let's say he has an uptick in pass catching. He goes from 18 to 25 passes. You still need him in order to get value. You still need him to get about 1,800 yards. I mean, it's something crazy like that. Whereas likely he's going to be like 1,350 in the yardage. I'm not saying, listen, if you believe that he's just going to do what he did last season and add on to it with the pass catching, keep him there. For me, I think he's going to, I'm projecting him to pull back a little bit adding in the passing game. I would probably feel more comfortable taking him at the end of the first round. I certainly like that you put Kenyon Drake ahead of him. I definitely would take Drake ahead of him.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get there. And I certainly would put Austin Eckler ahead of Derrick Henry. All the guys, because if Austin Eckler, what do you catch, 90 passes last year?
I'll make an argument against Austin Eckler. And my, I'll tell you what my reasoning is. I think Derrick Henry is going to absorb all the touchdowns for his team. And that's really...
How many are you projecting him for?
Let's give him 16 touchdowns. And that's, whoa, I think, conservative.
Wow.
I think it's conservative. I think he'll have two touchdown games, and while there may be games where he doesn't score a touchdown, I think when the Titans are winning a game, he will have a touchdown in that game, maybe two. So if I project them for 10 wins, I expect him to have 10 touchdowns. When the Titans win the game, Derrick Henry will have scored a touchdown, maybe two. Sometimes when they lose a game, he'll have scored a touchdown. But I think almost always when they win the game, he will have scored a touchdown. So, and there are just going to be games where he dominates and comes out and puts up 200 yards. He's not a normal player. It's very similar to the Marshawn Lynch situation. And I was always hesitant to draft Marshawn Lynch for the same reason, because I'm like, man, they don't use him in the passing game. But my man comes out, he gets you the 100-yard bonus when that's available. In a good game, he gets you two touchdowns, and he just does. And so he's just so hard to tackle.
But there's going to be games, Derrick Henry, where he gets zero touchdowns, where they're on the goal line and Ryan Tannehill rushes it in, or they do a short pass to A.J. Brown or Jonnu Smith. What I'm saying is that you just can't responsibly project Derrick Henry for more than, I'll even say, 12 touchdowns. It could happen, but it's irresponsible to project him for that much.
Let me make the argument, though, for Derrick Henry, and it's going to be a little bit different, and this is going to change your way of thinking a little bit.
All right.
In games, so you can, we've talked about this before. We can get players that are going to deliver consistent, but never explosive. They'll get you consistent numbers, though. They're going to get a lot of time. And I love players like that. I love players like that early. That's what we're talking about with the top end of the draft. And everybody who I have ahead of Derrick Henry, including, you know, Dalvin Cook and Kamara and those names. Why? Because they're used heavily in the passing game. They might not be as prolific touchdown scorers. They might not be as prolific volume recipients. But they're always going to get their 5 to 7 receptions a game. And that levels everything out. You know, they might run for 100 yards and a touchdown and get you 7 receptions for 70, but they also might get you 7 receptions for 70 and 60 yards and no touchdowns. And all right, that's still pretty good. I got a 16-point day. What Derrick Henry brings is week winning upside, probably 5 weeks of the season. There will be 5 weeks next season when Derrick Henry will win you your week just by himself. Like, not by himself, but the rest of your team would do shit. Henry had one of his games. And that, to me, is what he brings to the table. He brings the occasional game where you're going to get 180 yards and 2 touchdowns, maybe 3, but certainly 100-plus yards and 2 touchdowns, and there'll be multiple games like that over the course of the season. So it's just a different approach where it's like, this dude will win me some weeks, and then those other weeks, hopefully my other guys rally.
Right, but what I'm saying... But and I agree with that. But I'm saying there's going to be 3 or 4 weeks where he actually loses you the week because he just got game scripted out, or I mean it's that, or he gets 80 yards but doesn't score and doesn't catch any passes.
Seen it with him. It will right. happen.
And again, that's
squad fish. I mean, well, that's why you're not taking him first. Well,
I think he doesn't belong in the first round. I'm saying it's like that kind of upside is okay for your second pick. I think to the one of the ways to win fantasy is not to screw up the first round. Okay. Now I'm not saying you have to hit your upside players. You have to, you know, you have to get more right than you get wrong. All the obvious, right? But I just think that one of the key things that people forget is just your first round pick should be so boring. And so that's why I made the argument for Zeke. There's like the least amount of risk in any player other than Christian McCaffrey and Zeke. So you just don't want you hear this, people. You've listened to other podcasts. You listen to the DFS Army podcast. You hear them. You can't win your draft in the first round, but you certainly could lose it. Just make the safe pick. Derrick Henry has all the upside in the world. I just think that there's so much downside in a non-PPR that I don't disagree with your, you know, that he belongs as a top 12 running back. I just disagree that he belongs in the first round of any fantasy draft that's PPR.
That's fair, but you don't have to take him in the first round. What
oh,
I'm
yes, you do. Do, I, oh, I mean, yes,
you want to get him, then you do, but then yeah. you don't get him. So that's really the question of what your approach is when you're drafting. So let's pump it up a little bit. I want to go back to Alvin Kamara.
Yeah.
A guy I like a lot, but not a volume guy. And I think a risky pick. I do have him ranked 4th overall, but it's important to note with Kamara that he is not their goal line back, and he will have touchdowns. He will have good games where he scores, but the role that he plays on his team will lead to a lot of duds, a lot of games where you probably could have gotten the same out of someone like Leonard Fournette, just PPR, you know, upside without the touchdown. And so while I have him 4th, I probably won't have Alvin Kamara on any team that I've drafted this year. I'm going to go to Michael Thomas ahead of him because I think Michael Thomas is a better version of what Alvin Kamara is. And on the same team, I still kept him at 4th overall because I do think he belongs there. His floor is spectacular. He almost never gets you below 13 fantasy points in a game. He's almost always good for 6 receptions for 60 yards and then some extra. Get a touchdown maybe. Get some rushing yards. Okay, thank you. 12 to 19 points. But he needs the touchdowns. He's only going to get 12 to 15 carries or touches per game for the Saints, which is significantly less volume than what I think is going to happen for the rest of the running backs. And again, going back to Derrick Henry, if we need to, Henry, as long as the team's not losing big, is getting you 20-plus touches most games. They haven't brought in anybody that's really a replacement for him. So that's the big difference here. I want the volume for my running back position, and you don't really get that with Alvin Kamara. So buyer beware on Alvin Kamara. He is up there, but that's a spot where I'm kind of like looking to zag a little bit. I understand he belongs where he does, and he makes my ranking spot for 4th overall, but beware of the lack of touchdown upside. He'll get those games. He'll have a 3-touchdown game or a 2-touchdown game more than once. But if you look at his returns from last year, and I see no reason why it would be any different, there was game after game after game between 10 to 15 points. He was a bad DFS play, and so therefore I kind of see him as probably an overrated asset overall for fantasy purposes. People forget how many games he just didn't produce in last season.
Yeah, I disagree a little bit. I you stated a lot of facts, so I don't disagree with any of the facts that you said. So you lay out the facts, but here's where I differ. I don't disagree. I differ a little bit. Is that amazingly enough? I mean, I thought this was actually one of the craziest things as I was researching Alvin Kamara, is that he had 81 catches in all 3 of his seasons. I mean, he matched that number. 81. It's such a weird number. It's not 80. It's not 85. It's 81. And he had 81. So, I mean, if you're going to let if you're going to tell me my running back is going to have 81 catches every year, I mean, that is enough to support the floor. Now, a lot of things went wrong for Alvin Kamara last year. He only scored 5 rushing touchdowns, 1 through the air. The years before, I mean, his rookie season, he had 14 rushing touchdowns. And like this, his second year, he had, I think, 19 total touchdowns. So I think there's going to, you're right that he's not the goal line back, but I think positive touchdown regression is coming. I certainly don't think he's going to have 5-1 again, meaning on the ground and through the air. I think it's more like 7-3. So I think that we can project a little positive touchdown regression for Alvin Kamara just based on his first 2 years' performance. Also, Alvin Kamara didn't perform as well when Drew Brees went out. When it was Teddy Bridgewater, it didn't go as well for Alvin Kamara. If Drew Brees stays healthy, I think that that's a boon for Alvin Kamara's fantasy value. Now, that said, Drew Brees is 41 years old. There's no guarantee he's going to stay healthy. And Jameis Winston, I mean, he didn't have he was great for fantasy production last year to the wide receivers, but we didn't see much fantasy production to the running backs. I don't think that Alvin Kamara compares to the Tampa Bay running backs from last year, but I agree with that. You should have healthy skepticism, but you know, thankfully that you kept Alvin Kamara there. It's one of those picks that sounds like you'll make and hold your nose, but I think that a lot of people are going to have recency bias, similar to what you just stated, and for good reason, but I think he's as rock solid as a pick you could take anytime after the first four picks are off the board.
I mean, he's the fourth pick, so,
You said you'd take Michael Thomas ahead of him.
Well, yeah, that's right. So that's what I'm saying. It's just, yes, Michael Thomas is gone. All right, now I'm taking Kamara.
Yes, I'm saying. Anytime, for me, I'd also have Dalvin ahead of him, but I understand why not. But I'm just saying, from pick five to any point in the first round, I'm happy to have Alvin Kamara. And it's one of those things. I just said it a minute ago with Derrick Henry. This is the opposite. This is, I don't need 1,800 yards. I just need, Alvin Kamara gets like 900 rushing yards. That's it. He doesn't even get half of what Derrick Henry gets. But you know why he ranks close to Derrick Henry every year or exceeds him? Because he catches 80 passes.
He gets that's like PPR. Love
yes,
it.
Yes. It's the pass catching running backs. It's so, I know people know it's a good thing, but it's so undervalued when it comes to taking running backs that catch passes.
It's a huge part of it. Six receptions is a touchdown, but again, a touchdown is six receptions.
But plus the yards exactly that come with it.
Yardage, but of course, plus the yard. All right. Let's continue because I don't want to harp on the top end of the draft. I want to go into my first crazy bold prediction here. I've got Kenyon Drake, RB5, pushed up ahead of Dalvin Cook, pushed up ahead of Joe Mixon and Derrick Henry and Austin Eckler and the whole group. And I'm going to tell you why. We talked about pass catching running backs. We talk about volume running backs. What is lacking here in Kenyon Drake? Why is he not Christian McCaffrey? What is he not doing? He catches passes. He's dynamic. He's a dynamic runner. He's on a team with no other options at the running back position besides himself. Everything about Kenyon Drake and the talent has been there the whole time. When this guy has been given opportunity in his entire career, anytime he's had volume, he has exploded. So the talent is there. The opportunity is here. The only reason why I think that other players are being looked at ahead of Kenyon Drake is because Kenyon Drake hasn't done it for a full season. He has no cachet with his name. It's like, hey, I know this name. This guy was drafted high. Whatever. Whatever. There's no replacement on the Cardinals for Kenyon Drake. There's no backup waiting in the wings to take his touches. None of that. He is the guy. They've committed to him. I love Kenyon Drake. I think he's going to be a volume guy, and I think he's been one of the most explosive running backs with the ball in his hands throughout his entire career that no one really knows about. What say you, Cez?
Yeah, I mean, if you go back to our podcast last summer, I had Kenyon Drake at RB13 when he was universally ranked outside of the top 36. So you know how I feel about him, even when he was in a bad situation. I was looking, you know, from his first few years in the league, and I said, whoa. This stood out for me. I sorted my spreadsheet by efficiency and I said, okay, let me see what's going on here. And every time Kenyon Drake touched the ball, something good happened. He just wasn't, for some reason, wasn't being given opportunity in an Adam Gase offense. And as we later found out, a lot of people.
Yeah. It turns out he's really bad at being the coach.
Yeah. So, you know, I've always loved the talent. I like how his pass catching ability is. We've just talked about a few times. And the last month of the season, Kenyon Drake went ham, and including a couple 30-point fantasy weeks. I mean, he was ended up in the last month of the season. He was a top 10 running back, I think even higher than that. And he finished the season as RB15, despite barely playing in like the first six or seven games. So I'm on board with you here. I don't have any problem with him taking there. In very early best ball season, when he was going at pick 23, you said that he should be going in the first round. And now all consensus rankings have him at pick like 9, 10, 12. So everything that you said, there's no disputing it. It would have been the mind-blowing bold call 2 months ago that you did make. And now it's just a mildly bold call because you've already, you know, I mean, but thank God we have it on tape. When we put out a little clip of this, I'll get the clip from two months ago.
It's fucking annoying that you make bold calls and then the entire market comes around to your way of thinking and you're this months before.
It's the opposite of annoying. What's going to happen is people, you know, because we study this stuff year round. We don't stop. We don't take other seasons off. And when you need a few days, a few weeks to rest to do some of your MMA stuff, I keep grinding. I bring you all the data and the research. So
you MMA bets that fucking print cash like an ATM machine. So
there you go.
It works
there you
out
go.
Pretty well.
But what's good about it is that, you know, people will then pay attention to not just us, but other people that are researching the stuff year round. So Kenyon Drake locked, loaded, no problem.
All right. Now I want to tell you why I moved him ahead of Dalvin Cook, because this is very controversial. Why not Cook? Why not Cook? And I'm going to tell you why I moved him ahead. And it's Cook is a volume based running back for the Vikings. He excels with 25 touches a game. That's what he was getting last year when he was putting up the big numbers. I think that the Vikings are concerned about his health. He's gotten injured every season in the league so far. He's had some sort of an injury. And with Alexander Mattison waiting in the wings, I no longer think we will get 25 touches per game out of Dalvin Cook. And when his touches per game go from 25 or 27 down to 17 to 20, including pass catching work, which is great, I just think that the expectation here has to be subsided just a little bit. I think they like the backups they have in place in Minnesota, and I think they believe philosophically that they don't want to run this guy into the ground, that he's not able to handle a 25 touch per game workload. And so I think that they're going to pull him back a little bit. We'll see more of an 18 touch situation per game for Dalvin Cook, which will still be great, but it's not quite the elite volume that I think we can get out of, you know, some of these higher guys, even Kenyon Drake, but certainly Barkley, McCaffrey, and you know, the people I have ranked ahead of him, including, yeah, Kamara and Drake, for all intents and purposes.
All right, cool. Yeah, no arguments there. Sounds good. You know, to skip around the board a little bit, you know, we'll do another about 15 minutes or 20 minutes of this now. I figure we could each, you know, talk about a couple players. There's some that I want to talk about that are, I've been watching the ADP move all over, and that's why I like to draft in each month. I like to do drafts in February. I like to do drafts in March, April, May, because I like to get a little piece of each market at each stage of the ADP shift. And one player that is falling like a rock that I literally have in 100% of my drafts is Mark Ingram. And I understand why Mark Ingram's falling, but I'm still drafting him. And the reason is that there is a market perception that the teams that used high draft capital on premium rookie prospect picks have basically just discarded their veteran running backs. And there's three running backs that fall into this category. Okay. So it's Marlon Mack, Damian Williams, and then Mark Ingram, who I'm going to talk about first. So Mark Ingram looked great to me. I know he's age 30, but he looked spry to me last year, and he's next to Lamar Jackson, which always adds to your efficiency. He's going to have touchdown opportunities. Now, Mark Ingram last year finished as RB11 on the year. That's an RB1 in fantasy. He's now available. He's dropped into the late fifth round. There's no way that J.K. Dobbins is going to come in the first month of the season and have a significant role. And I don't want to say no way. It's unlikely. The one nitpick, you know how much I love J.K. Dobbins. He's my number two rookie prospect. Okay. The one nitpick in J.K. Dobbins' game is his pass blocking. And we know that rookies that don't have elite level pass blocking are going to have trouble seeing the field early. Now, J.K. Dobbins is going to be fine. He should go where he goes in dynasty leagues. But Mark Ingram, that first month of the season, is being completely undervalued. And if you can get off to a 3-1 start because you went receiver early and then have Mark Ingram as your RB2, I think that's a little bit of a hack to get those good wide receivers that people are passing on.
Yeah, I mean, I like the call on Ingram, and your reasoning behind it is very sound. I think you can even tack on the extra added bonus of sort of no offseason this year, a little bit of weird training camp situation happening where I think a lot of these rookies are going to take a lot longer to get up to speed than they would even in a normal season. So I think the progression of a lot of these rookies and the draft positioning in terms of redraft across the board is probably way too high, considering they're going to need a few extra weeks, maybe a month, month and a half, to really get up to speed to an area where they might be at in the first week or two of a normal offseason.
Well, I mean, let me give it
met each other.
Let me give it to you in real terms with real examples right here. Okay. So whoever you said you like Kenyon Drake in the first round. Okay, no problem. Let's say you're at pick 7 in your draft and you grab Drake. It comes back around in the second round, right? And what most drafters are doing is they're taking someone like Aaron Jones and they're passing on DeAndre Hopkins or Tyreek Hill because they're like, hey, I need to get my running backs now. I love all the fourth and fifth round wide receivers. I love, I love Terry McLaurin. I love DJ Chark. I'm just going to get those guys and fill in running backs. Wouldn't you rather, knowing how much you and I have been concerned about Drake, just pass on Aaron Jones in the second round, take Tyreek Hill, and then come back in the fourth round and get someone like Mark Ingram? I mean, it feels like the perfect strategy.
I like the strategy. You know how I feel about Aaron Jones already. You know that.
That's my point.
But he's not the guy I want.
People are passing on Tyreek Hill for Aaron Jones. That's happening in real drafts with real money on the line right now.
I think that's a big mistake. I think, like I said, I think, I'll transition over to Aaron Jones. I think he's the most overvalued player in the entire RB class this year, coming off of low volume like he does every single year. Now they brought in a goal line smasher to take some of that goal line work away from Aaron Jones. Jamal Williams is still there, operating inexplicably in the passing game for the Packers. There are too many bodies on that team. He's not going to get
good
touches.
You brought up the rookie, A.J. Dillon, as Green Bay. I heard a really good comp for him the other day. It was Michael Turner on the old Atlanta Falcons and Chargers running back. I thought that was a good comp. But, I don't want to deviate. And your point on Aaron Jones is taken. I think that anyone that listens to this podcast knows that you don't like Aaron Jones.
You're not getting another 19 touchdowns out of this guy.
No. It's And he's going to be in the third round, it's defendable. I just don't think in the second round, that's what you want to do. Because like I said, the running back inflation is pushing guys like him up and it's causing players like Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, all those guys to fall.
To give you an idea on my rankings, I've pushed Aaron Jones down below Melvin Gordon and Miles Sanders.
Yeah, so I have no problem there.
Those are the guys. I think those guys are going to get more volume. I think they're on equally good teams that will score, and they're going to get more fucking volume. I want volume from my running back position wherever I could buy it. And again, Aaron Jones needs to catch basically touchdown passes at this point, and 19 of them.
Yeah,
50 yards.
I can't say it enough. My draft plan going in for the most part is flexible, but. I'm going to try to get, I'm just taking the best player available in round one. Round two, it's likely going to be a receiver. I don't like many of the running backs in round two. They're getting pushed up. And then I'm going to be okay. For me, I'm going to be totally comfortable taking those running backs that when everyone else is busy taking those receivers, I'm going to scoop up. I know they're not sexy names, but I'll take the two Dolphins running backs later as my RB2s and rotate them through. As long as I get at least one rock solid RB in the first round in the top 7 picks, there's no problem there. I mean, on that topic,
let's push down to the middle rounds of our draft. Okay. And let's talk about some RB talent that's dropping via ADP overall, but that we think can produce potentially RB1 numbers for an RB2 or even an RB3 price. Okay, I'll start with, I mean, I'm going to go with a guy that is as yeoman-like of a pick as you could ever put out there. But he just does his thing, and that's Chris Carson. Not much competition there again for Chris Carson. Penny, not going to be back for a while. No one wants Chris Carson. Why does no one want Chris Carson? You know the Seahawks want to run the football. You know they'll give it to him when they can, if they're ahead. You know they're that type of team. And yet you can get, I mean, let me get his ADP here, but I mean.
Yeah, it's like late third, early fourth.
He's going, you know, and I'm going to throw John Connor into that mix as well. Feel the same about him. Two guys. Sorry, I took your guy. But the two guys, I think,
James Connor. James
John,
Connor.
No, he's the Terminator. He'd always be John Connor to me, man. Terminator. Why do I do? I don't know. Ask David Bell. Ask David Carr what I think about.
Oh, okay. Oh, right. Because you say, right, David Bell. I'm like, you're all over the place now.
James Connor, Chris Carson, dropping third, fourth round. In your redraft league, you might even get him in the fifth. Like, you know, if it's not a best ball league, those guys will drop even further. And they're going to get...
Wait, hold on. Let's stay on task here. You asked about Chris Carson and why his ADP is where it is.
Why is it?
Okay, so there's no doubt that Chris Carson, he produced well when given the opportunity. But the guy, I mean... He fumbled more than he's had a fumbles at an alarming rate. His job is not going to be secure from a performance aspect if there's anyone behind him. Now, they did sign Carlos Hyde. Okay. Now, I'm not saying Carlos Hyde could set the world on fire. Obviously, we know he can't, but he can hurt your lead fantasy back. It can happen. Last year, Carlos Hyde on a Houston team totaled 1,000 yards and a decent amount of touchdowns. What I'm saying is that. You could see a situation where, so we just saw in the chat, Andy Moss just said that in our chat room here that Carson is injury prone. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, his ADP, if he was a guy, he's an injury guy himself. I mean, the Seahawks were reportedly trying to sign Devontae Freeman. They landed Carlos Hyde. They drafted DJ Dallas, who nobody likes. And I agree with you. The games he's there, he's going to be good. But... and his ADP is fair in the late third round. Now, if he didn't have those injury concerns or those fumble problems, he'd be an early second round pick. He would even be argued to go on the 1-2 turn. But so his risk is priced in. I think there is risk, but the upside's there. And again, if you go receiver early, it's the perfect guy to fill in with a running back pick. So
a yeoman like name. No one really gets excited to draft Chris Carson. You see him there, like, I don't know. But this is a guy who will get you 20 touches. Unless you think that Carlos Hyde legitimately is coming in to eat 10, 12 touches a game, which I don't think I'm buying that.
Well, like 6 or 8, but 2 of those could be goal line hits, you know?
That could happen. There could be some vulturing going on, but we don't know that. Again,
no.
So he's one guy that fell. The other one is Well, we got to keep hammering through. Let's talk about the Terminator. Another guy, injury concerns, sure. But I'll make an argument for the Terminator right now. That's James Conner, for those of you who don't know. My argument is this. Ben Roethlisberger, at the helm, has always produced quality outcomes from the running back position. I would say elite, and it hasn't mattered who it's been. It could be the Terminator. It could be Le'Veon Bell. It could be D'Angelo Williams when Le'Veon Bell was hurt. Didn't matter. As long as the guy can catch passes, elite production from the running back position, because Ben Roethlisberger does like to check down to the running back quite a bit, but he does so in a way that produces yardage after the catch instead of the terrible check down version that happens on like the Jets, where he just throws it to Le'Veon Bell, just covered, and he catches it and gets tackled in a second. Like, not that version. Ben Roethlisberger knows how to get it to his running back with space. So, Terminator, no real competition for the job. And Benny Snell is there, right? Benny Snizzles.
Well, and they also drafted Anthony McFarlane, who's a really good prospect in round 4. And I know it's round 4, but Anthony McFarlane is he's a beast. He's a beast. He's a good running back. Well, you just said the key thing is that he's not going to come in year one. And the reason Anthony McFarland was drafted was not to replace or put back James Conner. It was because the Pittsburgh Steelers likely weren't happy with their depth or their backup situation. You're right. It's more of an indictment on their backups than it is on their starter. I think James Conner, he was going like in round five. I know he's into the third round. Some health concerns, but again, it's priced in. When you get into the third round, you're drafting running backs. That means there's something, you know, there's concerns about him. If James Conner last year was like going in the first round at like pick 11, so what's really changed? He had an injury year. I mean, the year before that, he catches passes. He's the goal line back. He's in a prolific offense. So he's fairly priced in the third round. Another one of those guys, if you decide to not partake in the running back inflation, it's a perfectly good pick. No problem with his ADP. It's probably very fair. I mean, you know, if you miss out on the girly Melvin Gordon in the second round, which feels highly priced, James Conner feels fairly priced.
And absolute legit concerns about all of these things. There's legitimate concerns about his ability to stay healthy. And one of the things I always talk about with running backs overall is, we never know who can hold up to a full NFL season until we see somebody hold up for a full NFL season. It's a different beast. Like, some guys just come into the league and they never, ever can do it. We don't know.
Yeah, I mean, in the first round, second round, you want to be careful of that. It goes back to what we talked about earlier. You want to make safe picks in the first round. Don't try to win it. Just try to hit a double or a triple in the first round. In the third round, you're going to have to take some risks. And I think that James Conner's injury risk, or, you know, any other risk that you could name with James Conner, is appropriately priced in. That's why you're getting him in the 3-4 turn. If he didn't have those risks, he'd be a first round pick like he was last year.
All right. So give me a couple of your kind of later round guys that we think have potential to rise up and possibly produce RB1 numbers for a bargain price, given a scenario or not a scenario that goes on. Give me a couple of names.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, there a couple of names are the ones that everyone hates that I think, I mean, that you can get Sony Michel in the eighth round. He's going to be the starter in New England. Tom Brady's not there. They're presumably going to run more. I know everyone loves Damian Harris, but you can get him too in the 13th round. So you can get both of them. So if you're in the early rounds and the best values are non-running backs, you say you have one running back through five rounds, and then, you know, you want to get your quarterback, and like, fear not. Someone like Sony Michel is readily available. You won't even have to fight the room for him if you want to take him in the seventh. Damian Williams, I think he's going to have if Clyde Edwards-Helaire wasn't there, people would be taking Damian Williams in the first round. Now he is there, so that's why. But Damian Williams is available in the eighth and ninth round. The other guys, Marlon Mack, nobody wants Marlon Mack. If you in the first four or five games of the season, I think Marlon Mack might outproduce Jonathan Taylor. Obviously, in the long run, that's not going to happen. But these are guys that nobody wants. We talked about Mark Ingram. And then I even mentioned a little bit earlier, but both of the Miami running backs can be had in the eighth round or later. And if you want to go even deeper than that, I mean, there's so many guys. I think that someone that nobody wants that's pretty interesting.
Both Miami running backs are not going to deliver RB1 numbers.
Oh, so you want someone that has that RB1, right?
I'm not saying give me a guy who might not be shit who's going late. I'm
sure.
Saying, give me a name of somebody who's being picked RB2.5, RB3 levels, you know.
Yeah, I mean, okay. So, 20, so
can rise up to top 10.
Sure. I mean, okay. I mean, Damian Williams would be that guy. And the other one, Damian Williams would be that guy. And I really do believe, I know that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers drafted Keyshawn Vaughn, and he's a good player, but I think that Ronald Jones is not, I don't think he has the upside to be an RB1, but I think Ronald Jones has the upside to have RB1 weeks, meaning he'll have a handful of weeks. I mean, this offense is greatly improved. Ronald Jones is younger than Keyshawn Vaughn. Let's remember that. He's going into year three, and he's younger than Keyshawn Vaughn. He was a 20-year-old rookie when he came into the league. He's almost 23 now. Keyshawn Vaughn is going to be 24 into the season. Ronald Jones, I think that when he was at USC, was electric. He was dynamic, and he he still owns that skill set. It may take a few years for him to mature into the NFL. This could be a big breakout season. Ronald Jones is readily available in the 7th and 8th round.
That's the bold call I'm looking for right there. Ronald Jones Jr. I'm going to give you one of mine that I think is going extremely late, but has the potential. I have a few guys like this. I mean, this
sure.
Is
let me hear. I'm writing them down so I can steal them from you in our drafts.
Maybe I shouldn't say anything.
No, you got to tell the people.
I'd love Darius Geis, aka the Juice, here. If, and this is a bit, you can get him after everybody. He's just Kareem Hunt is off the board. Mark Ingram, everybody's gone. And you then got Juice is sitting there, and he's like, "Hey, man, I know you saw me get injured a couple of years, but those few games when I was on the field, man." It was hot. It was sexy. It was electric. And that's what the Geis brings to the table. Now, he could be damaged goods. He could be somebody who could never handle it. We don't know.
It's all priced in, though, in the 7th round. You know what I mean? Like,
non-priced in. It's priced overpriced in. Right now, correct. He sets as the primary running back for a run-heavy Washington offense that they want to run the football. They want to control it. They want to control the clock. This is how that offense operates. So, you've got old man Adrian Peterson waiting in the wings. No one wants to give Adrian Peterson the football. He's only going to be in there if they need to put him in or if they need to spell. Geis is the explosive player. Yes, they drafted a kid. Yes, but I believe that kid they drafted is more of the replacement for Chris Thompson. I don't think he's kind of being viewed as the banger up the middle. He's the third down guy. But I think Geis can catch passes. He could do it all. And it's more important that the Washington offense wants to run the football frequently and heavily. Now, if Washington sucks and they can't score touchdowns, it might be meaningless, but they've won games doing this formula that they have of trying to control the clock. And if Geis is healthy, man, could see a 20-carry, 20-touch-a-game guy, get him in the 7th or 8th round. I love the play. I love stashing him on my bench. And if he, you know, he's going to be good for the first few games while he's healthy. If he gets hurt, okay.
Yeah, I think that answers your own question where, you know, the some of the runners that I named are guys that are available late that just can kind of fill in. I think that you hit the guy on the head that could actually has top five running back in his range of outcomes. None of the guys I named have that range. Geis for sure, if he stays healthy. And I think we all want it to happen. I think everyone likes Darius Geis. He looked different than most running backs look. If you harken back to our offseason podcast during his rookie process, we even talked about Geis was a better pure just runner, not overall running back or pass catcher, than Saquon Barkley. You know, we thought just his running skills on tape looked better. So I think that is probably the pick of this podcast as far as who could be that guy. Now, there's, you know, the floor is absolutely zero. I mean, there literally is no floor, but in the 7th round, it's priced in.
Another knee injury. All right. Now I'm going to throw two rookies at you from last.
Okay, I was gonna continue. I'll come back to it. There was some running backs being named in our chat that people want us to talk about. We'll come back to those near the end. After you,
yeah, we can pop back to some of those because I do have this other segment. So I want to talk about a couple of exciting rookies from last season that just didn't put it all together. Okay, they didn't put it all together. No touchdowns. Couldn't put it all together. And they're kind of available late in your draft as well. They're starters for their teams. They should be fine, but yet somehow something doesn't click. And I think they each have a flaw or two that we could talk about. But the names here are David Montgomery and Devin Singletary, with Montgomery being the Bears' two-down banger and Singletary pretty much being the show at running back for the Bulls right now. They drafted
Zach Moss.
Yeah, they drafted Moss, but I'm really not going to put too much faith into running backs that were drafted specifically late.
Third round is not too late for a running back, you know? Zach Moss was drafted in the 3rd round. There's some people out there. Devin Singletary was drafted in the 3rd round the year before.
That's fair. He was drafted fairly high. So
yeah, I think Devin Singletary is good. I do. And I think.
How much then does Moss affect Singletary? And explain to me and to everybody why it was that Singletary just couldn't put it all together last year. And same with Montgomery.
Yeah, I mean, starting with Singletary, remember, he was like, he had the first game of the season was a good fantasy game for him. I think he scored like 18 fantasy, but something like that. I'd have to look back. But then he was injured and he was out for like 6 weeks. And then, so you had to keep him on your team, one, because you drafted, because by draft day in August, he was like a fifth round pick and he had a good week one. You just weren't cutting him. So he sat on your roster. Okay. So people had that. Then what happens by the time he got back, you know, then Josh Allen, Frank Gore, like, you know, like the team was kind of rolling, you know, from the goal line perspective without him. But Singletary, those last month of the season, showed out. He caught passes. He did it all. But I think all the good teams, all the teams, but especially the good ones, realize you probably, if you don't have an elite workhorse running back, Zeke Elliott, Barkley, McCaffrey, you really do need like two rock solid guys to win football games. And I think that we could survive committees of two. We just can't survive committees of three. And Zach Moss, who's a good player by all counts, he was in most people's top six or seven running backs in this class. If he comes in and Devin Singletary only has a year of experience on him, I think they can both be relevant for fantasy, and they're both being priced appropriately. In fact, there's some people out there that think Zach Moss is a better player than Devin Singletary. I'm not one of them, but I think those two guys can work in tandem. David Montgomery is going to get all the volume he can handle. You know, there's people that loved him last year. There's people that think he sucks, but either way, I mean, is David Montgomery going to get less than 230 carries? I don't think so. Last year, he was being pushed up into the third round. That probably was a bit much, but now in the fifth, sixth round, if you need volume, there's going to be weeks that it's boring, but you're not expecting. So it's a volume play on a team where, you know, you just don't know how the offense is going to operate as far as the running game.
I'm just going to add in for both of those players, and I agree with everything you said. I'm going to add in for both of those players. My little take on Devin Singletary, the biggest, obviously Moss is a concern now. The biggest issue for him was the propensity for Josh Allen to take the ball in himself.
And that will happen.
Situations.
That's going to happen
a lot. It's very Cam Newton-esque. If you remember for years, Cam Newton, who the hell was the running back they had before McCaffrey came in?
Jonathan Stewart.
Stewart.
And they had D'Angelo Williams.
Well, D'Angelo Williams, but Jonathan Stewart never scored touchdowns because Cam would steal all the tutties at the goal line. And that's like, you know, there's nothing worse than watching. All right, let me do a little rant. There's nothing worse. You're watching your team. They get to the fucking 1 yard line. Your running back is on that team. You're like, yeah, motherfucker, it's my time. It's my time, red zone. Keep it on. You know, you're watching the Red Zone Network. You're like, keep that shit on, motherfucker. I want to watch my guy. And then it's like, oh, no. They took it in, or they handed it to the fullback. You're like, oh, no, not freaking, you know, yours, Jacek von Stumpenschweiger, or like whatever fucking Eastern European
name. Juszczyk.
Yeah, no, whatever Eastern European name the fullback on this particular team has. Or it's like, oh, shit. You know, they snuck it in with the go. So that's the worst. And you get a lot of that with the goal. So
You
want those touchdowns. You need them.
Yeah. Yeah. Put in layman's terms. I mean, Josh Allen is, you can reasonably project him for 4.5 rushing touchdowns. So if the Bills are going to score, you know, 25 times on the ground, or let's say 20 times on the ground, you know, now there's only about 15 or 18 left of those scores to go around. Yeah. I think Devin Singletary before the Zach Moss pick was probably projected for about 8.5 touchdowns. And now you probably have to lower that projection to 6.5. I think
not
that, you know,
score. Now, my issue with David Montgomery is just the baffling season he had last year, and I'm going to explain why.
Yeah, it was
on
bad.
On paper, the sort of the banger, the goal line back of a defense-first run-the-football team like the Bears try to be should be great. Like, on paper, that should work out. As a matter of fact, I even remember a game where the Bears were actually favored by, like, I don't know who the hell, I can't remember who they're playing, but they were like heavy, massive favorites last season. Like, it was finally the time for, I think it was it Tampa? I don't remember, but it was finally the time for Montgomery to shine in this game. And then they gave it to Cohen. Cohen went off, and I'm like, wait a minute. They're up like by 40 points and they're fucking giving it to Cohen. What are they doing? So like exactly in the game script that should have favored Montgomery, it was going to Cohen. Somebody else was getting it. And even in the game scripts that did favor Montgomery, for some reason, they just couldn't bang it in at the end zone. Teams just load up against the running back on that team. Now, at the time, because Trubisky was at quarterback, but I'm not sure that they've improved that situation. But it's just one of these situations, reminds me of the Jets, where the teams don't fear the quarterback at all, and they just load up to stop the run. There's not, so I don't know if he sucks, by the way, or if it was just, hey, no one could run against nine-man boxes when they're happy people to fucking man up on the receivers because the quarterback can't complete a pass.
People that love David Montgomery always cite his tackle-breaking ability, and a good take that a good counter take that I had heard, I actually heard Mario Puig on RotoWire talk about it, was he said the reason he has to break tackles is because he's always getting caught, and he's not fast, and he's not agile, and when you're always getting grabbed or your jersey pulled or wrapped up after 2 yards, you have to become good at breaking tackles or else you won't make it to the NFL. So it's, you know, people, like I said, they'll say he is a decent running back, but I think he's going to project as more of a one contract running back and then go the backup route. Let's say, you know, a poor man's Jordan Howard for comparison.
Yeah, just quickly, it's gonna be a bummer for those people who took him very early in or first or second overall in their dynasty rookie drafts, for example, because yeah, he does kind of have his arc seems to be going more the Jordan Howard way than it does, you know, the Leonard Fournette. Hey, let's.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, or some other way like that.
All right. Well, why don't we wrap it here? Since running backs are such a popular position, there's so much more to say about it. Why don't we even maybe come back this week with running backs part two podcast, and we can do another half hour on running backs. But why don't we stop?
We'll do a later in the season risers, you know, just kind of like ADP shift type approach, because we still have to do the wide receiver position. Once we get that done next week, Monday, we will have covered quarterback, tight end, running back, and wide receiver. The draft kit is filling as we speak.
Populating.
It's populating. Now, I don't want to sell it short. Dynasty, I believe, is there in full.
Yes.
So what we're populating right now is the redraft side of it as we break down each position group, and lots of changes. But I think one takeaway, I mean, we have a lot of great takeaways. This is not a year where you want to pass up on those elite running backs for sure. There does seem to be some talent late in the draft that we can get to. And, you know, even those sixth, seventh, fifth rounds that I think will be great as well to fill out some of that.
And there's some good zero running back players, you know, in the eighth round and later. Like, if you get shut out at running back, don't start reaching in your drafts. Like, you're going to be fine. You're going to be okay. Just take the best players once you get to the second round. Just, you know, I mean, always take the best player, but don't start passing on elite, like, wide receivers like DeAndre Hopkins, Davante Adams, if he falls, and Tyreek Hill to start taking, you know, Aaron Jones types of running backs. Now, Chris Godwin, we can debate that if he's belongs in the elite tier or not. I could see both sides. I don't have a good reason why not, but just be really careful and always take the best players that aren't going to lose you your draft. I think that is the takeaway from the running back podcast.
And I would add in one last thing. Beware of the rookies in a season where the offseason was really fucking weird. So we don't know what's going on. These teams haven't met.
By all accounts, they're going to be in training camp in July. But yeah, I mean, your point is well taken. There was no rookie camp. Usually, there was no offseason.
Usually there are multiple camps before.
Yeah, July, no, you're right.
Doing fucking Zoom meetings. And if it's anything like what my kids do on Zoom, they ain't learning shit.
Yep.
All right.
As a teacher in a school, I can tell you that the Zoom thing is noble and it has upside, but it was limited in its first experimental year.
Not so great. So for that, we'll do it for the DFS Army Bolt Calls running back episode. Guys, remember to sign up at DFSArmy.com for VIP membership. Get access to all of our DFS stuff. Daily Fantasy Sports, every sport, PGA, NASCAR, MMA, everything you fucking want. We got it.
Follow us on Twitter at DFS Army, at F Football Geek, and at Alan Sislowski. I will post that up. It's in the description below if you're watching on YouTube. Also, I'm just come over to Instagram. I'm putting out some exclusive content from our podcast, Geek. I'm sorry, some good clips and stuff. I'm Alan Fantasy Football, and also DFS Army Instagram feed and TikTok. We're over there. I'm on LinkedIn. Alan Sislowski on there. And Geek,
I got to tell people, you got to get over to my Instagram as well. I don't do any fantasy football content on there, but I do work out shirtless, and I post pictures of that, so you can get my workouts and you can see me shirtless over there. It's very I'm an influencer on Instagram. I do a lot of shirtless things. So look for that. I lost my whole train of thought. I was going somewhere and I totally
and
forgot.
With sports betting coming back, Sports Bet Army, go check it out. DM us in the chat below or to get a free 2 months. Sports Bet Army is coming back as sports start firing up again.
I have to remind now, of course, like and subscribe, but I do have to remind you for next time and for us as well. We should probably not wait until the very, very end to tell people to like and subscribe. But if you like these videos, it really helps us wherever you're watching it. If this is on YouTube, you want to see our handsome faces on YouTube, or you want to go to Podbean or Stitcher or iTunes or
Apple Podcasts
or whatever you got, the Pony Express. All of that tribute to Vic DiBattista tribute. Do that as well. Like and subscribe. It helps us get the word out. And, you know, apparently I'm told that's a good thing. So for Season Long Says, Alan Seslowski and myself, the geek, Kevin Allen, bold calls. We'll see you next time.
The best coaches in the game, we really ain't playing. We regroup up in the Slack chat where the coaches debrief. We be piecing these puzzles, occupy the chunk of the pie. Ain't no lie when we hit the block, helmets casket is top. You be seeing helmet after helmet, helmet after helmet. First place, second place, fifth place, eighth place, 12th place, 15, 16, 20. So many helmets, you got blurred vision, we got...